Welcome to the Deep Dive. If you've spent any time in the professional world, you've probably picked up the usual ideas about success.
Yeah.
And so you need hard work, yeah, but also sharp elbows, maybe being really assertive, even a bit ruthless sometimes. Most people think winning means someone else has to lose.
That's the standard story, right? Look out for number one. But what if that whole idea is just, well, fundamentally wrong? Today, we're doing a deep dive into Adam Grant's really fascinating book, Give and Take, The Science of Success. And believe me, it challenges pretty much everything we think we know about getting ahead.
Okay, yeah, let's get into this. Grant brings up this central paradox that's honestly immediately captivating. He basically sorts people by how they handle giving and taking, their reciprocity style. And he found this givers, you know, the folks focus on adding value without expecting something back right away, they cluster at both the very bottom and the very top of the success ladder.
It's stark, really. A high-stakes game. The givers who crash and burn, they get exploited, totally burned out, and end up at the bottom. But the givers who make it big, the absolute stars in nearly every field, they're hitting incredible heights because they give, not in spite of it.
And that is the crucial thing we need to figure out for you today. What are those super successful givers doing differently? How do they dodge the burnout, avoid being taken advantage of? And importantly, how can you use those strategies yourself? It's like finding that fine line between being a doormat and being a champion.
Right. And to understand that, we really need to lay out Grant's basic framework first. He talks about three main styles, these reciprocity styles that shape how we interact.
Okay, let's start with the one everyone's kind of wary of.
The takers. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're purely self-focused. Their mindset is the pie is fixed and I need the biggest piece. So they're always trying to get more value than they actually contribute, tipping the scales their way. Often they're great at managing impressions, climbing fast in the short term.
But you said their success is fragile. Why is that?
Because takers, well, they burn bridges. They might shoot up quickly, look impressive, but sooner or later, their reputation catches up. Their networks end up being pretty shallow, purely transactional. Grant points to someone like Frank Lloyd Wright, the architect, brilliant, no doubt, but his success often meant financial or personal trouble for clients and partners. Once people realize they're being used, they just stop helping.
Okay. And most people aren't actually takers, right? They fall into the middle category, the matchers.
Exactly. Matchers are the majority. They run on a principle of fairness quid pro quo. Tit for tat. If you help me, I'll help you. But we keep the score pretty even and settle debts quickly. They're actually vital for social balance because they act like the reciprocity police, punishing takers and rewarding givers when they see fairness violated.
Which brings us back to the givers. High risk, high reward. If takers get quick wins and matchers get, like, stability and fairness, why would anyone choose the giver path? Especially knowing so many fail. It sounds like maybe just being a matcher is the safest route, doesn't it? Mm. What really separates the successful givers from the ones who flame out?
That really is the million-dollar question. And the answer isn't whether they give, but how they give. Grant makes this really critical distinction between two kinds of giving.
Okay, tell us about these two approaches.
So the givers, stuck at the bottom, they're practicing what Grant calls selfless giving. This means putting others first to the point where you completely ignore your own needs, your own time, your energy. It's a direct path to getting exploited and burning out. There's this case study of Peter Audit, a financial advisor who was just so boundaryless, co-signing loans for clients, working insane hours. He almost went bankrupt. That's not really generosity. It's self-neglect, almost.
Oof, yeah. That sounds rough. So successful givers aren't martyrs. What does their approach look like then?
They practice other-ish giving. This is the game changer. Other-ish givers have a genuine high concern for others, but they also keep a healthy, smart ambition for their own interests. The goal is synergy. They get that by protecting their own resources, their time, their energy. They actually increase their ability to help others effectively over the long haul.
So, okay, ambition isn't selfish here. It's actually about being sustainable. Mm. But how do they practically manage all the requests for help? How do they not just get drained constantly?
They use some smart, practical strategies for managing their energy. And the biggest one Grant talks about is chunking. See, unsuccessful givers tend to sprinkle their help throughout the day, answering every email instantly, dealing with every interruption as it comes. This leads to massive mental fatigue because you're constantly switching gears.
Oh, okay. And the successful givers flip that.
Exactly. They chunk their giving. Maybe they block out an hour on Tuesday morning and an hour Thursday afternoon just for responding to requests, making intros, giving feedback. This saves their energy, protects their own focused work time, and importantly, keeps giving feeling good and sustainable, not like a constant drain. The trick isn't always saying no, it's controlling when you say yes.
That totally reframes it. It's less about being nice and more about strategic resource management.
Okay, let's pivot a bit. Where does this other-ish style give people an actual edge? You mentioned networking. Most people see that as pretty transactional, right?
Totally. Takers network based on who can help me right now.
Yeah, giver.
They build the strongest, most resilient networks because their whole focus is on creating value for other people without needing that immediate payback. They're always planting seeds, you could say, not demanding a harvest right away.
And the classic example of this is Adam Rifkin, right? The Silicon Valley guy with the massive network. That's him. Rifkin is famous for his 5-minute favor. Just a small, quick way he can help someone in his network. Maybe a quick email introduction, sending a link to something useful, offering a brief piece of advice. These things don't cost him much time or energy, but they can be hugely valuable to the person receiving them. And doing this consistently over time, it builds this incredible reservoir of goodwill, of social capital. His network doesn't just put up with him, they actively want him to succeed, often before he even asks for anything.
That's powerful, that ripple effect. Okay, what about influence? This seems like another area where givers might seem disadvantaged. We usually think influence comes from projecting power, dominance, right? But Grant says givers often use powerless communication. How does that work?
Yeah, it sounds backward, doesn't it? Takers try to influence by commanding, by being dominant, giving orders. Givers often achieve influence more subtly. They might use more tentative language sometimes, omit vulnerabilities, but the biggest tool is asking questions and genuinely seeking advice.
But wait, doesn't asking for advice or saying, I don't know, make you look weak? Especially in like a really competitive environment, wouldn't that undermine your authority?
You'd think so, but it often does the opposite. Think about it. When you sincerely ask someone for their advice, you're basically complimenting their intelligence, their expertise. You're signaling, I value your perspective. This makes people feel good, and crucially, it makes them psychologically invested in your success. They shift from seeing you as maybe a rival to seeing you as someone they're collaborating with. By inviting people in, givers build trust and psychological safety, which long term often grants way more influence than just trying to dominate.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's talk protection. If you decide, okay, I'm going to be an otherish giver, you're still putting yourself out there. You can still be a prime target for takers. How does this whole system not just get overrun by exploiters? Is it all on the giver to defend themselves?
That's a really important point. First off, givers do need to get better at spotting takers. Grant gives some clues. Takers often use I, me, my a lot more than givers or matchers in group settings, but maybe the most reliable sign is the kiss-up, kick-down pattern. Super charming and deferential to bosses or important people, but dismissive or even abusive to people below them or in service roles. Watch for that inconsistency. It's a big red flag.
That's a concrete thing to look for.
Okay.
But what about the matchers you mentioned? Do they help protect givers?
They're absolutely crucial. Think of matchers as the immune system of an organization or a social group. Because their whole deal is fairness, when they spot a consistent taker who's exploiting givers, they feel compelled to step in to punish or ostracize the taker to restore balance. Takers really only thrive when their behavior flies under the radar. Once the matchers catch on, the taker's strategy starts to fall apart. They help protect the whole collaborative environment.
Okay, good. So givers aren't totally alone. Now, one last tricky bit. What about when the otherish giver needs to advocate for themselves? Like asking for that raise or promotion. That seems like the hardest moment for someone naturally focused on others.
Oh, absolutely. It can feel really unnatural for a giver to argue purely, I deserve this because I'm great. Grant suggests a powerful strategy here, advocacy. The mental trick is to reframe the negotiation. Don't think about it as asking for yourself. Think about it as advocating for the people you care about, your family, your team who depends on you.
Ah, so it shifts the motivation.
Exactly. When a giver frames needing that raise as being crucial for their family's well-being or needing that promotion to better lead their team on an important project, suddenly that internal conflict eases up. They find the assertiveness because they're fighting for others, even if they personally benefit. It unlocks that necessary drive.
And the impact of this giver style isn't just personal, right? It lifts the whole group.
Huge organizational effects. Givers often act as catalysts. They elevate everyone around them. Grant uses the example of George Meyer, one of the key writers on The Simpsons. He was famous for giving away his absolute best jokes to make any script better, not just hoarding them for the episodes he got credit for. By making the whole show funnier, he made himself indispensable and boosted the success of the entire team, far more than if he'd just focused on his own lines.
Okay, so let's try and boil this down to the core takeaways for you listening. First big one, success seems to be less about just raw talent and maybe more about your style of interacting, your reciprocity style.
Right. And that successful giving needs to be otherish. You got to balance that genuine concern for others with protecting your own energy and interest. Remember chunking your giving, setting boundaries. Being sustainable is actually the most generous thing you can do long term.
And those networks, the ones built on adding value, even through small 5-minute favors, they're just way stronger and last longer than networks built on just taking or transacting. And really, Grant's whole idea pushes back hard against the notion that work life has to be this cutthroat, zero-sum game.
Yeah, I mean, if we really start to accept that our success is genuinely tangled up with the success of people around us, then investing in others becomes the smartest investment we can make. So maybe try a little experiment this week. What's one small, low-cost act of generosity you could do? A quick intro for someone, a moment of genuine praise or recognition. Just something small that might create a positive ripple. See what happens.
That's definitely something powerful to think about. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into Adam Grant's work.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.